Okay. Drugs, use and abuse in halakha. There is no particular reason that I chose this topic, except that this past Shabbos in a lot of shuls, not in this country, but in other countries, they did a mental health Shabbos. So, you know, substance abuse might have been one of the topics. So I saw, I just was bouncing around. We actually had planned to do it here. We're going to do it a different week. It didn't work out this past Shabbos, but we're going to do it a different time. So in terms of mental health and halakha, this is definitely a topic that comes up. I want to focus tonight specifically on marijuana, hashish, cannabis, grass.
Well, as long as it's not included in the substance abuse, that would be...
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. So before we even jump into the implications according to halakha, which is our focus... Of course, and that's also going to be judged by the halakha as well. Before we do that, I've heard it said that Israel holds a special place in terms of the development and usage of cannabis, and I didn't really understand totally why. And this is not going to clear up why it's true now, but definitely it clears up for why it was true in the past. This is the first article, and none of you have it in front of you unless you're looking at your phone. This is from the National Geographic from June of 2015. And it's an article about cannabis. And it starts with, even into the middle of the 20th century, science still didn't understand the first thing about marijuana. What was inside it and how it worked remained a mystery. Because of its illegality and tainted image, few serious scientists wanted to besmirch their reputations by studying it. Then, one day in 1963, a young organic chemist in Israel named Rafael Meshulam, working at the Weizmann Institute of Science outside of Tel Aviv, decided to peer into the plant's chemical composition. It struck him as odd that even though morphine had been teased from opium in 1805 and cocaine from coca leaves in 1855, scientists had no idea what the principal psychoactive ingredient was in marijuana. Meaning, what is it that gives you the high? So Meshulam called the Israeli National Police and scored 5 kilos of confiscated Lebanese hashish. He and his research group isolated and in some cases also synthesized an array of substances which he injected separately into rhesus monkeys. Further testing found what the world now knows. This compound is the plant's principal active ingredient, its mind-altering essence, the stuff that makes you high. Meshulam, along with a colleague, had discovered tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, which is what makes you high. In other words, the world has Rafael Meshulam to thank for figuring out what it is about marijuana that makes you high. For these breakthroughs and many others, Meshulam is widely known as the patriarch of cannabis science, one of the avos. Yeah. In 1922, Meshulam's quest for quantification, this is 30 years later, led him from the plant itself to the inner recesses of the human brain. That year, he and several colleagues made an extraordinary discovery. They isolated the chemical made by the human body that binds to the same receptor in the brain that THC does, and he got to name it. Meshulam named it anandamide, from the Sanskrit for the supreme joy. When asked why he didn't give it a Hebrew name, he replied, because in Hebrew there are not so many words for happiness. Jews don't like being happy.
He's never been,
which is absurd, wedding. Right? Yes. Absurd. We have Ditsa Rida.
Gila Rida
Ditsa, Chedva Abba, Simcha, Sasson.
He's talking about German Jews, not about...
Maybe. This is 1920, 1982. He should know better.
He has such a firm name.
Exactly. Very strange. But okay. But this gives you a little bit of the Israeli history in terms of marijuana. What?
He was high.
Yeah. Now, what does halacha think about marijuana use? So let's get some things out of the way. So first we'll talk about the medicinal use of marijuana. So what purpose does it serve in terms of using it medicinally? So there could be a few uses. One main use is for the dulling of pain. Right? So the Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg, who was also a former chief rabbi of, or the head rabbi of Shari Tzedek, the hospital. So, and he writes about medical halakha a lot. So he says, "L'fi ani yotati nira de kol heichat shetachshiri ha'refuah nitanim hen b'tzurat kadurim v'hen b'tzurat zrikot." As long as the medicines you're getting are in pill form or in injections, nitanim heima aide harofe, and they're administered by a doctor, b'matara kadei lahakel me'alav yisurav hakashim, mutar lo latet l'chole. As long as they're being administered by a doctor for the sake of reducing pain, it's perfectly fine to give whatever they want. to a patient. And even if, in some way, it affects his health negatively, in other words, the medicine that he's getting is going to actually hasten the end of his life and may cause him health problems. We can think of morphine, you know, late stages before a person dies, often hastens the death. He says, nevertheless, this is part of the permission that the Torah gives to the doctor to heal. At the end of the day, almost all medicine is like this. If it does good for one thing, it does bad for another thing.
That's side effect.
Everything has a side effect. The Ramban, by the way, he's quoting the Sefer Torah to Adam. Sefer Torah to Adam is a long, I wouldn't call it an essay, but it's the Ramban's treatise basically on the beginning and the end of life. He starts with birth, and he goes through life, and then he goes to the sickness, and then terminally ill, and then death, and then Shaar HaGemul, which is the last part of it we've actually talked about it, is about the afterlife. So, you know, the book takes you through the sweep of the cycle of life. And it's a fascinating sefer. It's also a halachic sefer, so that's what he's quoting over here. Vimkein. Achinami, benitinat zrikat morphium, v'chadome, hagam sheze ba ach v'rak kedei lahashkita te yisurim, even if it's given only to dull pain, mikol makom nir digam ken b'chlal kedei l'rapo to. It's considered medicine. Tenin chadavar shekashe la'adam esavlo yav yoter mi yisurim habayim alav lo aleinu, v'lachen kishenotnim lo davar kedei lahashkita te yisurav, zeho ba'atzmo nikra netinat refu'a l'rapot, ulahashkita te yisurav, umutar lakach latet lo zot hagam shemidach ze alul l'karev mitato. In other words, the purpose of Oldenburg's pointing this out is that even if the medicine could hasten the death or could cause health problems for the person, nevertheless, it's always going to be okay when it's administered by a doctor for the sake of the physical improvement of the patient.
And he's using sound medical. He's using sound medical.
Think if a doctor says that this is a good thing to do for a patient, then that's
good. Nowadays, you know, all of like the morphine, like all that stuff, which nowadays they say don't give
morphine.
No, morphine. What's the other one? What's the pain medicine that everyone takes nowadays?
Codeine.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
Because it's addictive.
Oxycodone, yeah, all of that stuff. Like nowadays right. They say don't give it, but yeah.
Because it can be addictive and it could cause long term problems. Right, but yeah. But so he would say the doctor. That's up to the doctor. So the doctor. That's a question of health.
I was prescribed oxycodone after my knee operation. And I was given a 4-day dose of it.
I was taking now.
All right, everybody's going to start.
No, I'm serious. Don't take it. Because it's got codeine in it.
Let's keep it not personal.
It'll affect you and your sugar. And
right,
whatever.
So that's up to the doctor. You know, that's a doctor decision. Right, if the doctor says take it, he should take it.
The way it makes sense, it's because it's the doctor making the medical decision.
Yes, he's saying as long as it's the doctor making the medical decision, then it's nitan arofi l'rafot, he can give you whatever he wants. Okay?
You're using medical logic.
Of course. He's assuming the doctor's a doctor. Rabbi Bleich writes similarly, Judaism affirms that everything in creation is designed for a purpose. Alleviation of otherwise intractable pain is a known beneficial use of heroin. Okay? Mm-hmm. Marijuana is effective in alleviating nausea, that is a side effect of some forms of chemotherapy that's often given to cancer patients. There is every reason to believe that these drugs were given to man for the specific purpose of controlling pain and discomfort. We're going to get back to this later, actually. Jewish teachings would enthusiastically endorse legislation legalizing the use, with adequate accompanying safeguards, of these substances in treatments of terminal patients. The OU even gives its imprimatur for medical marijuana. Of course, using marijuana for pain relief is kind of a no-brainer, right? That's kind of an obvious one. But nowadays, it can also be given as a form of anxiety medication as well. Or people may say, okay, you know, I need this for psychological purposes. I think that's going to get much more complicated. What?
On a black end, he refers to control the pain and discomfort.
Right.
But then the end, he ends up with...
Yeah. This alleviating nausea.
With adequate accompanying safeguards, of those substances in treatment of terminal patients, however, that's very specific.
He might even be talking about, I mean, there's no other...
Someone who isn't terminal.
Well, I assume by terminal he means including, you know, all cancer patients, even if they have, you know, if they could get out of it. It's just for the purpose of alleviating nausea. But that doesn't matter if it's not terminal.
That's not. I mean,
why not? Yeah. You,
that last sentence is supposed to be. He's limiting the enthusiastic endorsement to those who have in treatment of terminal patients. Not.
I'm not sure why it would matter necessarily if they were terminal. If the doctor decided that, you know, yeah, but.
But that's what he says. Jewish teachings with enthusiastically endorse legislation legalizing use with adequate accompanying safeguards of those substances in treatment of terminal patients. He's very specific.
I'm assuming when he says terminal patients, he's just describing the severity of the condition.
So only people who are on the verge, like who are on the terminal path.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to people who have extreme anxiety. People
okay,
who,
yeah,
people
no,
who
no,
just
no.
have, you know, really
you're right,
bad
I don't
back
think
pain.
He's covering that.
People with really
you're
bad
right.
back pain. People with.
Well, I don't see why he wouldn't be covering that.
Because that's not a terminal patient. He's very specific. I'm
you think it's some kind of pikuach nefesh, thing?
It seems to be, it's like,
but it's not pikuach nefesh.
It seems, I don't know, we'd have to, I'll ask him before, from his language, his, that last sentence, he seems to be, he's limiting his heta.
Okay. I'm not totally convinced, but I hear you.
Also, Rabbi Black, unless I miss it, doesn't have the specifics of the tzitzit Eliezer, which says only in pill form or injection form, which leaves open the possibility of smoking marijuana.
Well, I mean, if the doctors say this is how you take the marijuana, then that's how you take the marijuana.
So
I don't think it has to be.
Tzitzit Eliezer doesn't go with that. He specifies pills or injections.
I don't think that the Tzitzit Eliezer would say that if the doctor tells you that you should smoke marijuana, that he would say, no, no, you can't smoke marijuana. You have to take it in some other way. I don't think he would say
that.
I think
that
was the way you take it. Yeah, that's this. That's
but what
just
is
you take it.
No one thought that would be
the Tzitzit Eliezer?
Yeah, because
I think he's just saying if it's some kind of formal, prescribed way of taking medication.
He's saying, so like, you know, back then it was when he wrote this.
He wasn't talking about marijuana.
You mean when he wrote that people weren't smoking?
He wasn't talking about marijuana.
Not medically. It wasn't as common as today.
What year is that? It's Chelek Yud Gimel. I don't know. Probably 30.
Yeah, it wasn't as broad as today. Today, like,
I don't know if it was prescribed by doctors.
No, medically.
But it wasn't prescribed by doctors.
It was by the doctors. You couldn't just talk to a doctor. In Israel, they passed a law in 1979. That was when they first started giving out licenses.
We were one of the first.
So it's. And even then, like after 10 years ago, it was very hard to get.
By the way, before we even continue, I want to just mention that almost all the sources that I got from Rabbi Mordechai Tutshiner, the Shiur Manuah Yitori. He has actually like three or four of these. It's kind of funny. The three in different contexts, and most of the sources that I got are all from him. So that's in terms of medical marijuana. What about what's more interesting is recreational use, okay? And talking about the legalization of marijuana, which is not for medical purposes, but rather so that anybody can use it whenever they want. Different countries are doing it in different ways. I know that Canada, which is, you know, the latest and greatest to legalize marijuana, they're doing it through the government, though. The government is providing... It's still legal to sell, I think, commercially.
It has to be through government-issued license.
Yeah. Government-issued marijuana, you have to go and you have to get it there. And for minors, it's still completely illegal. And I don't know what defines a minor, though.
What do you mean a minor?
What?
I think it's 18.
Oh, minor. Yeah.
Right, for minors...
Who's
Yeah, it's still completely illegal for them, not unlike alcohol.
Very similar.
And but I don't think that the same rules apply in places like Colorado and California. I think you can grow and
there are individually owned stores.
Right, you can do whatever you want. You bake into brownies.
Yeah,
but it's all complicated with federal and state law. It's all very very complicated. But who knows when it's going to come to Israel? You know, could come to Israel if Feigen gets in.
He
could come to Israel.
Not him. The former prime minister is the largest importer.
I'll take that after you.
This is Twitter from like last week. I just bought 5 tons of weed from Brazil.
Are you serious?
Ehud Barak's tweet from last week. Yeah.
Well, there's a big shortage.
Oh my gosh!
No, I said he's the largest. Ehud Barak.
Ehud Barak.
You see?
He's the largest. He's the largest. He's the largest importer and exporter of yeah. So.
Okay, so here's the question: What do they do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do if they legalize it in Israel? And there's two ways to think about this. One is to think about what are we going to do. But I think a more interesting question, which may get to the heart of what we really think, is what are we going to do if our kids want to smoke marijuana? Your kid comes home and says, I want to go to the makolet. And instead of getting sour sticks chamtzutzim for two for a shekel, I want 10 shekel, Abba, I want 10 shekel, I want to go buy special bannies.
Why is this any different than cigarettes, alcohol?
That's also a really good question. That's also a really good question. I want to wait on that one. I want to wait on that one because it's obviously a very big question. It opens it up.
Because it has a bad name.
Okay, but so good. So you know what? Let's open it up. What if your son or your daughter comes home and says, "Can I have 10 shekel? I want to go to the store to get special brownies."
My niece is 22, 23. She smokes.
Let's not make it actual story.
I'm just saying. Don't ask me if I want to join her. I want to join her. Okay. No, thank you.
Okay.
There's only research to show us in like usage among minors of seriously affects their brains later on, and they and that hasn't been finished yet. They have like they're just starting doing that research.
Okay, so let's see what the rabbinic authorities have to say about this. Yes, fair to see what the rabbinic authorities. Now, obviously, things change over time, but we only have what we have. The landmark tshuva over here, in other words, the one that's most often quoted, is Rav Moshe Feinstein. Wrote this tshuva in Tafshin Lamed Gimel. Tafshin Lamed Gimel is 40 years ago. Okay, so 37 years ago, you know, it's a long time ago. And we can kind of discuss whether or not all of his points are still relevant today. But let's see what he has to say, because he answered it clearly and straightforwardly. This is a question that was asked by Yerucham Fram, which I've heard, he's a doctor. And basically what happened was, Rabbi Turchiner said he actually asked this person, he found the person who wrote the Shaila to Moshe. And he asked him, you know, what was the story behind it? And he said, basically, what was going on was that it was a certain yeshiva where the boys started smoking in the yeshiva, marijuana, and all the rabbeim were against it, and they didn't even want to discuss it. They were just like, absolutely not, you know, if we catch anybody, they're going to get in big trouble, and they wouldn't want to discuss it with the students. But that meant that they didn't have any solid answers for any questions that the students were asking. So this teacher... or a psychiatrist, I'm not exactly sure. So he sent the Shaila to Rav Moshe to get an answer. So we'll read the Shaila. But in terms of the other question that might have been asked, which is, what should we do to the students that are smoking? Should we let them stay in the yeshiva? So Rav Moshe said, absolutely, you should let them stay. Absolutely. The only ones that you should kick out are the ones who are supplying and encouraging the usage of the marijuana. Those are the ones that you need to get rid of. But everybody else, keep them there and take care of them. Okay, so what does he have to say about it? So here's what he answered. Hine, b'davar asher itchilu eze bachorim yeshiva la'ashen chashish, marijuana. Pashut shehu davar asur mikama ikrei dinim shabbatorah. It's pashut that it's asur, and I counted six different reasons that he gives for this. Chada, shehu mekalkel u'mechale et haguf. V'afim nimtzu anashim b'rim shelo mazik lahem kol kach. It's medically bad for you. It's bad for your body. It damages your body. And even if you can find for me people that it doesn't damage their body, aval makalkel hu et hadat, v'inam yicholim lahavin davar liyishuro shezeh od yoter chamor, shelevad shemoneh atzma milim Torah, karaui, hu meniya gam mitfila u mimitzvot haTorah, she'asiya b'lo da'at haraui hu kelo kiyumam. It affects their brain function, which... it's not bad enough that it's causing a bittul Torah because you can't learn properly, but they can't even do mitzvahs properly because some mitzvahs you need to be of sound mind in order to be able to do them. And you won't be of sound mind if you're high.
Same we said about drinking.
You could. We'll get to that again. Va'od shehu goreim ta'ava gdola asher hu yoter mita'avat achila v'chadome hatzrichim la'adam l'chiyuto v'yesh shelo yuchlu l'tzamseim u'lahavir ta'avatam. Now here's where it starts to get more interesting. It says also... it creates more desire. It doesn't satisfy. It creates more desire, and it's a greater desire than eating. In other words, the hunger that you feel towards drugs is greater than the hunger you feel towards food. And some people can't control it.
Kashrut.
So you're not allowed to cause yourself to feel a great temptation, a great desire. Especially if it's a kind of desire that you don't really need. You're creating the desire out of nothing. You don't really need these things. It's the fact that you've become addicted to them. That's why you need them. I'm not saying that we start giving out malkut to people who are smoking. He says that this is an explicit mitzvah daraita. The mitzvah daraita over here is kedoshim to you, or mitzvah ben sorer umoreh, which is that you shouldn't be a kind of person who is zolel v'soveh. Zolel v'soveh is what the Torah says about the ben sorer umoreh, is a person who creates and runs after his ta'avot. So he's basically categorized this as an actual mitzvah daraita that you're violating. Now this is also a very interesting answer, very interesting reason. He says, what are we worried about the Ben Sorer Moreh? What are we really worried about? Are we really only worried about this person that he's going to get out of control and he's going to always run after his taivas? No, that's not what we're really worried about. What are we really worried about? Shilastem et habriot, that he's going to become so driven by his desires that he'll do anything in order to get the money needed in order to fund and sponsors desires, including stealing, hurting, killing, anything it takes. So the same is true with people who create their own addictions. Vod, Sha'avayim Shalelo Shemashnim Zem Itzdarim Ma'od Asher Ovrin Al Mitzvah Kibbut Aveim. Another problem, violating Kibbut Aveim, their parents don't want them to do this. Vod, Ika Yisr Hasei Dekadoshim Tiyu, referenced this before, but this is a softer version, I guess, of the Ben Sorer Moreh argument. It's a violation of Kadoshim Tiyu, you're being... It's clear that the Ratzon HaTorah is not to become addicted to substances. I have another six. I don't know why I have another six and not a seven. V'gamim gormim li yisurim arbe acharim levad zeh. Sof davar, and it causes other yisurim. You're going to do other yisurim. Sof davar hu pashut baro shehu mi yisurim chamurim v'tarech lishtadel b'kol ha'yicholot ha'avir tum'ah zu mikol b'nei Yisrael u'befrat me'elu shalom dimi yeshivot. We have to get rid of this ra. Okay, so that's what Rav Moshe has to say about this. Six or seven reasons why a person should not get involved in marijuana use. How many of these still apply nowadays? How many of them might have been...
Well, it doesn't apply anymore.
I don't know.
I mean...
I don't see anything that...
I mean, so there's a machlokes about whether it's a gateway... Like, if you want to say it's not a gateway drug, which is what some people claim...
It is a gateway.
He didn't say gateway, but he did say...
No, but it's easy to list them. As in, but
he never said gateway.
Like,
we never used the word gateway.
No, right, so because marijuana itself apparently, some people claim it's not addictive.
Yeah.
And so if it's not addictive, it's only because if it leads you to something else which becomes addictive, which then makes you...
There are two aspects to...
He doesn't mention
it's
that.
It's bad for your body.
No.
Professor says it's bad for your body.
There's two aspects to addictiveness, okay? There's two aspects to addictiveness. There's chemical addiction, which there's a big machlokus about whether or not. It seems to be that scientists have noted that there is no chemical addiction to marijuana. But then there is a psychological addiction, which is you really enjoyed it. So, of course, you're going to become addicted to something that you enjoy. It's not a chemical addiction. But it's something that you're going to desire more and more, and you're going to need it. And certainly withdrawal is definitely definitely exists. His point being, though, that once you want it, you're going to want it more and more and more, and in order to fund it, you're going to need to do more and more things to make that money. And you might be willing to do illegal things in order to make that money.
This is Buffy Buddy, Buffy Brain.
I mean, some parents don't mind.
Now, whether it's bad for your body... It's also debatable.
Right,
well, he also debates that. I mean, his number one point, which I guess still applies for today, is the second one, which is because you're definitely affecting your brain.
So, but let's say we said it only affects your dot while you're actually high.
Or the tava, which
operate
said creates
machinery. You can't do anything
because that's great tava.
When you're drunk, then you can't have when you're
high.
Yeah. So that's what Moshe has to say. Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the next one. So he says, "Vada yish isur mitzad." Just a spoiler alert. there are no rabbis that say that it's okay. Just so you know. Shavada yesh isur misal adim lekachat samim delekichat samim kamo shosim barachov vaday mazik et gufo vasur mishum chabalat gufo. Says your body is not your own. You're causing damage to your body.
But why is this different than cigarettes? Or alcohol. I mean, they don't say anything about
all right,
the
fine.
They don't say anything about the yeshiva. Everybody smokes there.
Not in my yeshiva.
Alcohol, and lots of times there's like little kids that they give cigarettes on all these chagim. Purim, we're not talking. People go mamash crazy about with drinking. And
it seems like we're not going to be able to wait till later. So I guess we'll talk about it now.
Buy me cigarettes.
So
you're the one we walk around the whiskey all the time.
So look.
There's a difference between cigarettes and drinking.
Whiskey, cigarettes don't make you not think straight,
whereas drinking does.
You're right. They're two separate problems. They get combined in marijuana. Although I think marijuana is probably healthier than smoking tobacco.
So let's actually think.
Let's think for a second. What's the difference? So one answer is you're right. There's no difference. They're both bad. And why don't we shrive a kayam? Why don't we have a shir about recreational use of wine? So maybe we should. And the answer might be, well, you know what? We tried to get rid of alcohol in the 20s, right? Dad, remember that? We tried to get, and it didn't work. It's a gzeira she'ein atzibur yichalon la'amod
bo. But even here at Shifte, there were evenings where wine testing and whiskey appreciation.
So wait. Let me just.
Why don't we have like a
great question? So let's.
Wine appreciation here at Shifte.
So good.
There was a famous YouTuber of Kanievsky. I think in 2016 where he said his question for Pesach.
Yeah.
Ah, that's right. Yeah. We had a share on it.
Yeah, they showed it to him. They did the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you knew what it was, but.
No, the thing about.
But that was medical. They talked mostly about medical. Hold on one second. Let's just go step by step, though, before we jump the gun. So one answer might be, you're right, it's just as bad. And the reason why we don't look at alcohol and cigarettes in the same way that we're looking at marijuana is because marijuana, we're still, before it became, you know, a household problem, right? For marijuana use, so there are some people that do it, right? But the people that don't do it are not going to start because it's, right now, it's illegal and it seems wrong. So we've reached that threshold where it's wrong enough that people who like doing the right things, so they're not going to do it. And people that haven't already started doing it. But with wine and with cigarettes, so let's say with wine, it's already been thousands of years that it's been legal. So it's very hard to make it illegal. And when we tried, it just created a black market and it created a lot of bad stuff. It just didn't work. With regards to cigarettes, it's pretty much the same thing. Cigarettes were, not only were they okay, but they were considered healthy, like more healthy than not smoking for the longest time. But now that it's not, there have been great strides already to making it not happen. And you're right that in yeshivas, a lot of yeshivas, it still is going on. But that's not to say that all the rabbis are okay with it. The majority, vast majority of poskim, of rabbinic authorities, say it's asur legamre. Vast majority.
Cigarettes. For sure.
Say it's asur legamre because it's going to kill you.
The vast majority of the leaders
say it's asur. That doesn't mean that students aren't going to, you know, continue to do it, and there are going to be some rebbeim that also do it because they probably have been doing it for years and years and years. So you have to wait maybe a generation. We'll see what happens in a generation. So from that perspective, the answer might be, you're right, that's bad and that's bad. Why should we now do another bad thing? And the reason for it being bad is still bad. Another answer might be, let's put cigarettes aside for a second. With regards to wine, wine does hold a special place in Judaism, right? Wine holds a biblical place and it holds a rabbinic place. If you turn the page, let's start actually, you know, with going all the way to the side. So on page number 4, you can't turn the page, but you know, virtually turn the page. On page number 4, I quoted a Gemara in Brachos. which Daf Yomi next we'll get to in several weeks. Tani Tanaka Meid Rabbi Yochanan. Kol minei mashken yafin l'chalom, chutz min hayayin. All kinds of drinks that you see in a dream. The whole ninth parak of Brachot, not the whole ninth parak, but there's about four dapim that are about dreams. They're wacky. So there's one section over there where it says that if you see this in your dream, it means this. If you see this in a dream, it means that. Of course, the Gemara kind of unravels it when it says dreams, whatever you see in a dream, it's whatever you interpret it to mean. That's what it means. But leave that aside for a second. There are some objective meanings. And it says if you see a drink in your dream, it's good unless it's wine. Why? Yesh shoteo v'tovlo, v'yesh shoteo v'ralo. Some people drink and it's good, and some people drink and it's bad. Yesh shoteo v'tovlo, shenemar v'yayin yisamach levav enosh, v'yesh shoteo sharalo, shenemar tenu sheichar lo'oved, v'yayin l'mari nefesh. So it can perform good things, and can also be abused. Amar Rabbi Yochanan l'tana, tani tamir chacham l'olam tovlo, shenemar l'chu lachmu b'lechma l'lachmi, v'ashato v'yayin masachti. Masachet. Right, so for a Talmud Chacham, it's always going to be good. If you turn, the next Gemara is Gemara Nedarim. I just saw this a couple nights ago. A certain person said to Rav Yehuda, you're a teacher and a drunkard. How can you be a teacher and be a drunkard? It was very disapproving because Rav Yochanan looked drunk. Now, what did he look drunk? Why did he look drunk? So his face was a little ruddy. It was red. He looked like it was shining, looked like he was kind of flushed. So he said, you're drunk. How can you be a teacher? Rav Yochanan responded, you may well believe that you should believe me that I taste no wine except for Kiddush and Havdalah and the four cups of wine that I drink on Pesach, on account of which I have to bind my temples from Passover until Pentecost. I can't even stand it. I don't even like it. But a man's wisdom makes his face shine. Basically, what did Rabbi Yochanan say? You see my face? You see what this is? This is a natural high. I'm high on Torah. That's what he said. He said, I'm high on Torah. That's what he said. Now, what is the flip side? So, David, this is maybe what you're looking for. The Chaye Adam on page 3. It says, Kevan Shekol Han, he's talking about Purim. Page 3, the Chaye Adam on the bottom says, Kevan Shekol Hanes Haya Al De Yayin, Ki Batchila Nitrada Vashti Al Yedei Mishte Uba'a Esther, V'chein Inan Amanu Mapalatoi Al Yedei Yayin, V'chein Chivu Chacham Hishtaker Ulefachot Lishtot Yoter Merigelo. Kedei Liskor Hanes HaGadol. That's the reason for the wine. V'omnam, hayodeh ba'atzmo shi'ezalzel, az, b'mitzvah min ha'mitzvot, b'nitilat yedayim, u'bracha, u'birkat ha'mazon, o shelo yitpalel mincha, o ma'ariv, o she'inhar kalut rosh, u'tav shelo yishtaker, v'kol ma'asav yu l'shem shamayim. If you have even a chashash that you're going to do something wrong, don't drink at all, because it's better not drink. In other words, the answer might be, we have wine. We use wine. We use wine for Kiddush. We use wine for Havdalah. We use wine for Pesach. Not to get drunk, but because wine holds a special place in culinary history as being something that is mechubad, because perhaps, and I would just suggest, maybe because it has the ability to intoxicate, skirting the line of drinking it but not getting intoxicated is some kind of juggling act which has some kind of importance. I don't exactly know how to define it. Because, by the way, in many halachot, some poskim say that if, you know, let's say the question of grape juice. Can you use grape juice for wine, for Kiddush, for Havdalah, for the Arba Kosos? So some say, no, if it's not something that can intoxicate, then you can't use it. Well, what's the idea? They want you to get drunk? Is that what it is? Think people are supposed to get drunk under the chuppah when they drink the wine?
No.
Obviously not. Obviously not. But the idea is that it's a special drink because it has the power to do it. We actually did, for those of you who were at the Shir last week on Parashas Va'era, the Netziv wondered, why do we drink wine specifically? Why do we have four kosot at the Seder? He wondered, why do we have four kosot at the Seder? So he says over there, it's fascinating, he says, because the Seder is supposed to be a transformant. Like he says, why not four pieces of meat? Why not four matzahs? Why not four pieces of karpas? Four pieces of marah? Why wine? So he says, because the Seder is supposed to be a transformative experience, and the only food that we have that transforms a person is wine. It's the only one that we have. It's the only one that actually affects the brain. Now, does that mean you're supposed to get drunk on Pesach? No. It doesn't mean you're supposed to get drunk. It just means that you're supposed to have a food that is transformative, and wine is a special ability to do that.
Transforms to what?
Well, it transforms your mental state. It makes you less inhibited, is the first thing that it does.
What's the purpose?
It's the kind of thing that a slave would not be doing.
Yeah, that I can understand.
It's a rich person's drink.
But Yosef wrote, put out a poskim, certain cigarettes boxes are kosher la Pesach.
All right.
Certain ones.
Okay.
And they got a red seal on it saying kosher la Pesach.
So moving on and away from Pesach, because it's coming soon. So here's something very interesting. The Gemara in Brachot. Okay, I didn't really know what to make of this. Rabbi Turchiner said something that I was surprised. On page 2. Sorry. The Gemara in Brachot, Daf Mem. So he quotes Rabbi Chama, son of Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chanina, one who regularly uses ketzach will never come to heartache. So ketzach is apparently nowadays known as black cumin.
Yeah, it's like seed on top of the challah.
Right. Sounds like poppy.
It's not.
I think it's similar, though. It's some kind of opioid, though, nowadays. But didn't Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel say ketzach is one of 60 poisons? And one who sleeps east of its granary is liable for his life. So one person said ketzach is good for you, but the other one says if you live near a ketzach plant, you're in danger. No problem. One is regarding smelling it, the other is regarding tasting it. In other words, smelling it is bad, tasting it is good. Smelling it is like smoking it. Rabbi Yirmiyah's mother baked bread for him, and she stuck ketzach to it and then peeled it off. So she had a way of making special challah, right? Sounds like making challah. Yeah. So that's kind of a precursor to opioids. Poppy bagels. My parents didn't want me to have poppy bagels when I was going for a drug test before I went to work. They were convinced that it was going to show up on the test. It didn't.
It has been known to happen that having a poppy bagel will give you a positive drug test.
It shows up. It shows up for mice when they give mice small doses of poppy. What?
It happened to me.
It did not.
It did happen to me.
There you go.
I had to retest because
no, it didn't.
Yes.
What happened?
I don't remember what I ate. It was like some stupid Jewish thing.
Gosh. The Hamid Dashim.
No, it was like, you know, you dip your bunny into chocolate and you pop it and you're the ech.
Yes.
It's terrible for you. Not only is it terrible for you, but it's terrible for your test. I have to retest.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I have hot poppy bagels all the time, and I had one then, and I...
Drug testing.
Interesting.
I love poppy seed.
Poppy seed.
Interesting.
Hovind Tashin was
poppy.
As in real poppy seed?
The best.
Poppy, like...
Poppy seed. Messed poppy. Up with drug tests?
Yeah, because opium.
Because
they test for opium. It's probably not psychoactive in any way when it's in that form. But the point is, it could be a drug, so...
Excuse the test, that's right.
Now, what happens? What happens if your son comes to you? He comes back from yeshiva. All right, he's not 13 or 14. He's not in high school anymore. Now your son comes back to you. He's 18 years old. He just came back from Mechina. And he says, Abba, I want you to give me 10 shekel because I want to go to the Makolet. Because my friends and I, we want to go meditate. And we want to prepare ourselves for shacharis. And so we're going to go to the store and we're going to get some marijuana so we can get high. And it will get us into a good mood. A good state, mental state for chakras, a good spiritual state. So he's doing it altruistically, and you believe him. You believe him. He's Shana Gimel, okay? He wants to get high, l'shem shamayim. What do you say?
He says no.
What do you say? What do you tell him?
Yeah.
What do you tell him? He wants to get high. Let's understand it. What's wrong with you. Stop being so square.
Have a shot of whiskey instead.
You join him?
So, Rav Menachem Mendel Schneerson, 7th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zatzal. He was written a letter. I am in receipt of your letter of October 18th, which you wrote in the name of your friends. I love that part. And in your own behalf. Okay, the guy was honest. And asked my opinion regarding the new drug called LSD, which is said to have the property of mental stimulation. Biochemistry is not my field. I cannot express an opinion on the drug you mentioned, especially as it's still new. However, what I can say is that the claim that the said drug can stimulate mystical insight is not the proper way to attain mystical inspiration, even if it had such property. The Jewish way is to go from strength to strength, not by means of drugs and other artificial stimulants, which have a place only if they are necessary for the physical health, in accordance with the mitzvah to take care of one's health. Right? That's what Rabbi Waldenberg said. I hope that everyone will agree that before any drugs are taken, one should first utilize all one's natural capacities. And when that is done truly and fully, I do not think there will be a need to look for artificial stimulants. I trust that you and your group, in view of your yeshiva background, have regularly appointed times for the study of Torah and the inner aspects of the Torah, namely the teachings of Chassidus, and that such study is in accordance with the principle of our sages, namely the essential thing is the deed. The actual conduct of the daily life in accordance with the Torah and mitzvos, This is only a matter of will and determination, for nothing stands in the way of the will. You'll be able to do it. I trust you. You'll be able to do it without LSD. He doesn't want it to be, want them to use any artificial stimulants in order to achieve mental states. I know exactly what my father is about to say.
Vodka. Yes. I didn't want to say it on the tape. I know what to
okay.
I'll tell you after you turn off the table.
Fine. Rabbi Steinsaltz, right? One of the he sees himself as a student of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Lubavitcher. So he says the problem with using any kinds of drugs or almost anything that has a little bit of psychoactive material is the same. Indeed, almost everything is psychoactive, including bread. If one fasts and then takes a piece of bread, it's possible to see how many changes are made in one's psyche. The specific problem, however, with drugs is that people come relatively fast to a point of no return. In truth, there's never a point of no return, but one quickly reaches a point from which it is very hard, almost impossible to return. By the way, one of the medical differences between something like alcohol and marijuana, from what I've read, is that alcohol has an almost immediate effect on the mental state. You can drink, and you'll almost, you know, within a few minutes, you'll start to feel it. That I can say, right? Whereas marijuana, actually, the effect that the marijuana has is extremely delayed to the point, it's delayed to the point where, actually, this is hafuch, what I'm thinking of right now, but it is delayed, meaning you don't feel the high immediately right after it starts. I was thinking of the inverse, which is that when they drug test you, this is one of the things that came up on the panel, when they drug test you for marijuana, the drug may not show up in your blood, but you're actually, it's still making its way towards the brain. So the peak of the high actually happens sometimes after the drug leaves the bloodstream.
That's why they take a hair follicle test.
Yeah, it could say anybody.
Why?
Because it's in your hair follicles.
It sounds like pseudoscience. Yeah. Like it's coming out of your head.
Yeah, it changes the hair. What's smoke? It changes the hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was actually the opposite of what I wanted to say. But one of the points is that it's a lot easier to control your consumption of alcohol than it is to control your consumption of marijuana. In other words, you don't know how much marijuana is going to get you into what state, whereas you kind of...
It's alcohol. It also
no, you can have like one drink and then you have a little bit more.
It's about weight, how
So we don't have a great...
If you're male,
that's true of alcohol, but with marijuana, people don't really know.
That's part of what he started with, because that's what, you know, like you said, research is being done more...
Maybe, but what I'm saying, with marijuana, you start with a joint, and if one joint is enough, then that's it. With alcohol, you can start with one drink, and you feel yourself, and then you can have another drink, and then you feel yourself. Like, you know. Yeah. So there's a certain amount of control that you can have when you're drinking alcohol. There's also the fact, and this is a separate fact, which is, and maybe we made this already, we made this point already, but there are some people who actually like the taste of alcohol. So, you know, a priori, it's not the case that everybody drinks wine in order to get drunk. That's not the case. However, I don't know if anybody's ever said the sentence, I smoke marijuana because I like the smell. Right, I don't think anybody's ever said Lisa's that.
He's never said it. She right? said, I don't think he likes to get high.
This is recorded.
The same.
Dave, don't say. I'm just saying it's not an excuse.
Listening to this.
So, I don't know, everyone is exaggeration. You know, we're coming towards the end of the time that I wanted to take up for this. So I did want to show you. There's this Piskei Din Yerushalayim. This is like the Beit Din of Yerushalayim. They came up with this, so we won't read the whole thing inside, but they basically said on page number 3, so you can read the whole thing inside, but they're actually talking about the addictive aspect to it, because they're comparing it actually to gambling. It's very interesting. It compares in some cases to gambling. This is, for example, it says, "Benidon didon b'ishon ha-marachwana, chalukot ha-deyot ben ha-mumchim im yesh bo sakana la-biyut ha-guf ha-nefesh." We don't really know whether it's dangerous. "Umimela yesh b'davar isur shal mazik asmo b'yadayim, shu isur Torah, o she'enu sakana mamash, yeshomim b'kol v'yeshomim b'kol." We don't really know. It nevertheless for sure causes kalut rosh and helgel ledvar veira. It creates an atmosphere of lack of inhibition, which causes people to do things that they shouldn't be doing. And he compares this also to Mesachik Bekubia, which is gambling, just in terms of the atmosphere that exists when you're involved in gambling, which is an kind of an atmosphere of Hefkerut. He's talking over there, in context, he's talking about being Matir and Neder. Okay, we have Yaakov Ariel over here, who's quoted. And the last thing that I put on the sheet was Rabbi Jonathan Muscat, who, not talking about marijuana, but actually talking about drinking and the culture of drinking in shul, and that it probably needs a change. But I want to end over here so that we can...
Allow alcohol in shul?
I went to Flint's house.
This is an article about how he's thinking about having a dry shul.
It's organic. It's a fire.
Yeah.
What did he do?
All right.